You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. President Biden signing an executive order while visiting Monterey Park, California, the site of that deadly mass shooting earlier this year. He's calling on Congress to do its part.
I'm determined, once again, to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines.
That order increasing the number of background checks to buy a firearm. The U.S. saying it was forced to bring an unmanned drone down after it collided with two Russian fighter jets over the Black Sea.
In recent weeks, there have been other intercepts. But this one obviously is noteworthy because of how unsafe and unprofessional it was, indeed reckless that it was.
White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby. Ohio is suing Norfolk Southern to make sure the railroad is held financially responsible for last month's toxic train derailment. The EPA now requiring water utilities to remove six of the so-called forever chemicals from drinking water supplies. This is ABC News. Sweden's prime minister says Sweden and Finland may join NATO in different phases. ABC's Tom Rivers reports.
Sweden and Finland applied jointly, but speaking in Stockholm, Swedish leader Ulf Kristersson now says...
Every country has ratified for themselves, so in formal sense, it's nothing complicated. But now we just want to say that we assess the possibility for Finland to join before Sweden, that possibility has increased.
Ultimately, he says the decision's in Turkey's hands, and Sweden's ready to handle the situation where Finland enters NATO without them.
Storms continue to pummel California. The latest atmospheric river expected to bring up to 4 inches of rain in some areas, prompting a rare high flood risk warning for Los Angeles. They've rescued at least 8 people from high water along the San Gabriel River in Los Angeles. In Santa Clara County, an elementary school student received minor head injuries when a redwood tree fell on her classroom. Andy Field, ABC News.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
You're listening to a Civic Media radio station. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. The roadblocks are down in Lac du Flambeau, at least for now. The town board and the Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa have reached a temporary agreement to buy time for a permanent solution. Easements on the roads expired more than a decade ago. The tribe started blocking parts of some town roads on tribal land at the end of January. Wisconsin Assembly lawmakers consider a bill today to stop the state's licensing board from barring so-called conversion therapy. Republicans have already struck down a recent rule that classified efforts to change a person's sexual orientation or gender identity as unprofessional conduct. Governor Evers promises to veto the bill if it passes. In sports, the Bucks beat Sacramento last night 133-124. Milwaukee is at Phoenix tonight. Also tonight, the Badgers open NIT play at home against Bradley. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Earn, play, and win at Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa. Rewards Club members can earn up to $155 rewards play and $5 to use at Whitetail Crossing or to grab a bite to eat at the Swiftwater Lounge. Guests may start earning points on your Rewards Club card 7 a.m. through 10 a.m. and 9 p.m. till midnight every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. For complete contest rules, see the Rewards Club booth at Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa. Become an off-road warrior with Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa. Now until March 25th, guests can earn entries for one of the grand prize drawings on February 25th. March 11th and March 25th. All you need to do is earn 25 points to receive $10 rewards play and an entry up to four times a day. One grand prize winner will win a gift certificate to Power Pack Sports and Equipment in Marshfield for a Polaris ATV or UTV, with six consolation winners being drawn to win a scooter cooler or up to $500 cash. For complete contest rules and to see the rides in person, visit the Rewards Club booth. Must be 21 or older to participate and enter the casino floor. Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, your place to play.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues. From the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
Here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. New York Times headline. After days of panic, bank executives can breathe again. That's right. After days of worry, our select few, our bank executives, sigh of relief. Wow. Dodged a bullet. And of course they can breathe. Of course they can breathe again. Because they got away with it. Again. Just like the last time. And the last time. And the last time. And the time before that. And oh yeah, the time before that. And yeah, the time before that. And before that. And so on. They always seem to get away with it. Always seem to get away with it. So, of course, they can breathe freely. Of course they're secure. Secure in the knowledge that they're not going to be out on the street corner with a tin cup selling pencils. Like what happened to any one of us. Yeah, of course they're secure in the knowledge of knowing that it's going to be their employees, their customers. And of course, the rest of us, we the taxpayers, who are going to get screwed over. Of course they can breathe again. Of course. And this is just one of those things where you go, will this ever change? And the answer is no, because they understand that their failure means our failure. And as long as they can make this big enough to where enough of us will suffer, we're never going to hold them accountable. It's never going to happen. And I've said for a very long time, you know, every one of those bank criminals who crashed our economy the last time, they should have been perp walked daily. We should have had, and this is the biggest failure of Barack Obama. And again, you know, this is one of these things that I'm hoping Biden learned it from. Now, understand, Biden has taken the position of, we're not going to bail them out. We're not going to do these things. We're going to make sure that the system is sound. And I get the thinking behind it, but the messaging still is, we've got to hold somebody accountable. Because the president did say we're going to hold people accountable. Fully accountable were his words. And I asked, what does fully accountable look like? I mean, real accountability, what does that look like? And I'm of the mindset that every one of these executives, especially the ones who hours before announcing that they were going belly up, took bonuses, they should be perp walked.
I'll even pay for the shiny bracelets that you slap on their wrists and put behind their back as you walk them out. Every board member who sat on those boards and collected a paycheck to advise these executives on the direction of the bank, they should be part of this. This is one of those moments where you go, the accountability should be wide, swift, and painful, as it is for average, everyday working people. And I know, you know, Rick, you're being cruel. No. This is what happens to working people in this country. There is no safety net for them. If we allow these banks to fail, and this is what they keep telling us. You know, if it fails, you know, the pain is going to be widespread, and, you know, workers are going to lose their jobs, and they're going to lose their homes, and their kids are going to live under a bridge. This stuff never happens to these executives, and this is my problem in this. The pain is never equally felt. So this moral hazard argument that they keep throwing out for, you know, making for not feeding children, for not giving, a social safety net that ensures that working people aren't the ones on the butt end of every disaster, never seems to apply to our three-piece suit crowd. Never. And I look at the people in Washington. And again, you know, I know they feel our pain. I know. And I look at Tim Scott, the Republican senator from South Carolina, who says, as a ranking member of the Republican Banking Committee, he says, I'm doing everything in my power to make sure we get answers from regulators on why they were asleep at the wheel. Because, of course, it's the regulators' fault. And, you know, because, of course, it's their fault that these bankers crashed the economy. And this is great because, you know, my mind goes, you know, the next time there's an accident, you know, maybe we, you know, on the highway, maybe we blame the policeman who was off duty having a barbecue at his house. You know, maybe we blame him. Or maybe we blame the off-duty policeman because there wasn't enough, you know, overtime money to keep him on the beat. Maybe we find anybody else. Maybe we blame the teller. This is the frustrating part. We're not going to blame Tim Scott because, after all, his party is the party of deregulation. And after all, deregulation is part of the reason we're in this mess. Also, the Republican Party is the party who said, no, we don't need to fund regulators. We need to make government small enough we can drag it in the bathtub and drown it in the bathtub. Remember that? So whether it's, you know, train regulators, whether it's mine regulators, whether it's Wall Street regulators, whether it's bank regulators, we don't have the money. And what they've done systematically, and again, this is a thing that Republicans have done for a long time. They've preached to us about how bad regulations are. Job killers! And at every step of the way, as we point out that, you know, as I said yesterday, who knew that even banks needed breaks? Who knew that we needed a cop on the beat at every bank to make sure that they don't do risky things that get them in trouble? Who knew? Me! All of us. We all know this. But again, we're told these are the smart people. They learned. And it's interesting that the very same people who got us into the last one are kind of the same people who got us into this one. Now, Representative Lueckemeyer, Blaine Lueckemeyer, Republican from Missouri, he's saying, look, we've got to guarantee all bank deposits across the entire country. And my first thought was, we already do for everybody up to $250,000. So for working people, because I don't know anybody who's got, well, I know a couple people, but I don't know many people who've got $250,000 in the bank or in one account or dumb enough to leave it in one account. Everyone is covered. It's those people who said, no, we're going to have larger accounts than that, that are unregulated and are going to take the risk of having that. That's who he's talking about, the very small percentage. So what he's really saying is, please help my rich friends. You know, the people who have more than $250,000 in uninsured accounts. And here again is another one of these moments where you're going to have to do it. Because if you start a run on these smaller banks, we're going to end up with monopolies, and we're going to end up with more failed banks, and we're going to end up with more chaos. And of course, it's going to end up being a situation where we're going to have to bail out more, because what's that old saying? You know what rolls downhill? You know the word that I'm talking about. It rolls downhill. Shh. It rolls downhill. We're at the bottom of the hill, and they know this. So when Luke DeMeyer, a banker himself, says, no, we need to do this for at least 6 months, a year, because we got to straighten out the industry. We got to clean up the mess again. It infuriates me, because I know we have to. But it also tells me that we lost again. Now, again, these are the same people telling us that we can't help those high school kids who took out loans to go to college. We can't help that single mother who bought a home that may have been just a touch above her ability to pay without overtime. You know, we can't help out that family that, you know, one of the parents lost a job or lost overtime or had to take a pay cut. We can't help those folks. No, they need to learn a lesson. But our executives, no. And the weird thing is, I was having a conversation today, and I was explaining to someone that, you know, this stuff, we get trained in this kind of stuff. The groundwork is always being laid to train us that, you know, we have to believe a certain way, and that behind every bad idea is a, you know, right-wing think tank who's spewing all kinds of garbage, a moneyed interest think tank that's dreaming up bad ideas, churning out one bad idea after another, and you know, kind of laying the groundwork. And the example that I used was how right now we're talking about, you know, child labor. Because guess what? We're heading for some difficult times. And what we're seeing is kind of these right-wing think tanks who for a number of years have been regenerating and rewriting history, you know, every opportunity. And like I said, I use child labor as the example of what's going on right now. States across this country are attacking child labor laws. Arkansas just signed a horrible one. Iowa's got a really bad one. You know, Wisconsin, I think the governor there vetoed one. There have been a number of states that are going after. You know, we're just loosening them. We're upgrading them. They've been talking about this in right-wing think tank circles for, you know, 5-6 years already, probably even longer than that. I think 2016, a number of groups were pushing this. You know, this idea that, you know, we need to let kids work. You know, well, there's dignity in work. You know, you may remember those kids of the, you know, those dirty factories and mines, but, you know, they were productive. They had pride. Granted, they didn't have all their fingers, but they had pride. And, you know, it you know, again, you know, rewriting history a little bit, you know, rewriting the what it took to get those kids out of the mine and what they're doing while not being at work. And I love the fact that over the years I've had these conversations with right-wing folks who've said, no, see, they won't go back to the mines. They'll just go, you know, to Walmart or to, you know, those low-paying jobs. Without remembering that at one point, and I guess I'm getting to be older now, that I remember when those jobs could support a family. Now, granted, we didn't have a gazillionaire class back then. We didn't have a family whose, you know, sole wealth was worth more than, what, 60% of the entire nation. But these bad ideas keep being pushed into our head. And when I throw some things out on social media, you see it percolating up. You see their talking points because they've built a right-wing infrastructure, cable news, right-wing talk radio, all of the places where, you know, you're learning through osmosis. And you see the, you know, well, we're forcing kids to go to government schools. Why not let them go to work and earn a little bit when they can earn while they learn? You know, a 13-year-old on the kill floor at the poultry plant. Why not? They're just little animals anyway. But I got into this conversation of, you know, of why these things work. because there's a little bit of truth. There's a little bit of common sense. There's a little bit of us in all of this. Because all of us did, you know, child labor jobs when we were kids. You cut grass, you shoveled snow, you had a paper route, all of those things. And it did. It taught us, you know, the value of a dollar. It taught us the value of hard work. It taught us responsibility. Taught us all these things. That's not why corporate America and the moneyed elite want children back in the workforce. They want cheap labor, especially now. Especially now as we're ramping up towards reclaiming some manufacturing from China. Especially now as we're seeing a tight labor pool. Where better to get cheap labor than to get those kids back to work? Because we're all saying all they do is sit around and play video games anyway. Get them to work in those kill floors. They got small hands. They can do the real intricate stuff. And they do. They move the needle to where it sounds reasonable. And then we become the frog in the pot. And before you know it, we're right back where we started from. So the question I have is, when do we hold these wealthy elites accountable? And when do we wake up from the game that they've been playing on us for, I guess, forever? I mean, we've fallen for this stuff forever. I mean, you go back 100 years ago, Jay Gould is attributed the quote, "I could easily pay half the working class to murder the other half." So nothing new, nothing surprising. Question is, when do we wake up? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Donald Trump can still draw a crowd. You look at Davenport, Iowa yesterday. He was in Davenport. Big crowd. And he told the faithful. They were out there with their merchandise. And look, you know, he has been. You got to give him credit. He knows how to fleece the flock, man. They were all decked out in the Trump regalia. But he was saying, look, you know, I'm the only one. I'm the only presidential candidate who can prevent World War III. He will not only will he prevent it, he's going to fix all of those problems over there. And I'm not quite sure how. Didn't give a lot of details other than, you know, I guess just because he's him. Now, in my mind, I go to this place of, well, he's just going to give Putin what he wants. Yeah, you want Ukraine? Go ahead, take it. Yeah, no worries. I find it interesting that the two top Republican candidates for president are basically backing Russia taking over. Him and DeSantis are both, you know, kind of, oh, no, we got to just kind of stay away from it. And what did DeSantis say it was? It was a territorial dispute. No, not a territorial dispute. It's a little more than that. And also, you know, he said in his speech that he wanted regime change, not in Russia, not in China, but here in the U.S., which is weird because when you hear about regime change, you usually think about overthrowing a country, overthrowing a government. So is this, you know, is this coup 2.0? Was he calling? Was this the dog whistle for the coup folks? Just a thought. Now, what's interesting is the Republican Party seems to be divided on this. You've got the Trumps of the world going, you know, I'll fix it. You've got the DeSantis's of the world who still kind of hedging a little bit. You've got some people saying we should pull funding completely. You've got Nikki Haley, who was probably the most, I think, rational on the issue. She said the Russian government is a powerful dictatorship that makes no secrets of its hatred of America. Unlike other anti-American regimes, it is attempting to brutally expand by force into a neighboring pro-American country, and it has also regularly threatened other American allies. She says America is far better off with a Ukrainian victory than a Russian victory, including avoiding a wider war. She said if Russia wins, there is no reason to believe it will stop at Ukraine. This is what I've been saying all along. And if Russia wins, then its closest allies, China and Iran, will become more aggressive. This has been my position from the beginning. And I'm not saying that she's right just because this is what I've been saying. This is one of those moments where you go, one, for the amount of money that we're spending on giving aid to Ukraine, to take out one of your top adversaries and not lose a life. If you would have gone to Ronald Reagan and said for, you know, $100 billion, we could do away with our problem in Russia, he'd have spent it in a heartbeat. And he wouldn't even have taken it from out of the mouths of poor children. He probably would have gone to rich people and said, hey, we should do this. I look at the reality of the moment we're in and the Republican Party and how scattered they are, because they want to blame Biden for what's going on. And this has been moving in this direction for years. Now, you've got Trump who's got this idea that somehow, you know, it's all Biden's fault. And I've had my Trump friends tell me this. It's all Biden's fault. And when Trump gets back in there, it's all going to be fine. And because of Biden, we have pushed Russia into the arms of China. And I'm going, do you not remember a decade ago, the BRIC countries coming together and trying to have a currency of their own? Brazil, Russia, India, China. Do you not kind of remember that they were trying to, you know, create their own reserve currency to cut us out and to start their own kind of chaotic situation? Do you not remember that? There's a natural relationship between dictators. And I find it interesting that Trump, you know, fits him or thinks he fits into that, because his ideology and his belief structure is right in line with what their thinking is. But I find it incredible that in this country, and I guess it's just because I grew up when I did, that there are people who are siding with Russia in this moment, especially people in our government, and who don't see what reality is. That if Ukraine loses, who's next? And if Russia does attack a NATO country, and we do have to, this is reality, and we have to get involved, and we have to send our young men and women over to defend our ally. That's how nuclear war begins. That's World War III. So by stopping Russia in Ukraine, by letting the Ukrainians fight for their own sovereignty, for their land, and giving them the ability to hold up their own, which I got to tell you, kind of shocking at how badly the Russian military has done. I saw a comedian the other day say, you know, they lost like 10,000 people the first week, and that was before the Ukrainians even had weapons. They were just throwing, stuff out of the kitchen at them. Now you've got Republicans like Mike Pence who's saying we should be increasing support. I actually agree with that as well. We should be giving them as much as they need to defend themselves. I've had some people say we need a no-fly zone. Not with us. Not with our equipment, not with us in it, not with our people. No. This is the Ukrainians defending their country. And we should be supporting that wholeheartedly. Just my thoughts. I want to hear yours. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Curious your thoughts on this. Especially the part where, look, this is one of our biggest adversaries. And in the event that they take themselves down...
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 5.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. President Biden signing an executive order while visiting Monterey Park, California, the site of that deadly mass shooting earlier this year. He's calling on Congress to do its part.
I'm determined. Once again, to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines.
That order increasing the number of background checks to buy a firearm. The U.S. saying it was forced to bring an unmanned drone down after it collided with two Russian fighter jets over the Black Sea.
In recent weeks, there have been other intercepts. But this one obviously is noteworthy because of how unsafe and unprofessional it was, indeed reckless that it was.
White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby. Ohio is suing Norfolk Southern to make sure the railroad is held financially responsible for last month's toxic train derailment. The EPA now requiring water utilities to remove six of the so-called forever chemicals from drinking water supplies. This is ABC News.
Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. A committee of state lawmakers is putting Wisconsin's parole commission under the microscope today. Republicans criticized the commission last year for freeing a man who killed his wife. He'd only served 25 years of an 80-year sentence. The woman's family complained they never got a chance to respond. His parole was eventually revoked and the chairman quit. More information is coming out about the baby found dead in Whitewater 10 days ago. Authorities say the baby was a boy who was less than 2 days old. Police found the baby in a plastic bag inside a cardboard box. Investigators say they're looking for the baby's parents. In sports, the Bucks beat Sacramento last night 133-124. Milwaukee is at Phoenix tonight. Also tonight, the Badgers open NIT play at home against Bradley. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate our new and still growing network of radio stations. When we announced the one-day $1 million advertising giveaway for Wisconsin businesses, you responded.
Just wanted to echo your sentiments about the advertising. That's really a cool deal and really remarkable.
$1 million of free advertising. Now, if you missed this chance to work with our team, go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. One of our local sales pros will get right back to you. Civicmedia.us and sponsorship.
It's easy to think all money managers are pretty much the same. But at Fisher Investments, we're clearly different.
Different how? You sell high commission investment products, right?
No. Fisher Investments doesn't sell any commission-based investment products.
Well, you must earn commissions on trades.
Nope. Never at Fisher. We're a fiduciary, obligated to act in our client's best interest. It's the highest standard of care for a financial advisor.
How do you know what's in their best interest?
We get to know our clients and then tailor a portfolio based on their goals and needs.
But you probably sneak in some hidden and layered fees.
No. We have one transparent management fee, structured so we do better when our clients do better.
Wow, you really do look out for your clients.
That's because our top priority is helping them achieve a comfortable retirement. It might be why most of our clients come from other money managers. Visit FisherInvestments.com to find out why investors like you switch to us. Fisher Investments. Clearly different money management.
Investments and securities involve the risk of loss.
It's 4 a.m. and you're sucking baby snot through a tube because she's congested. If you love her that much, love her enough to make sure she's buckled in the right car seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, an interesting story, I think it was over at Bloomberg, if I'm not mistaken, saying that U.S. apparel companies can't see a future without China. They say that brands are finding new factories outside the country that can produce the quality and quantity they require. And I'm going, they can make it here. We used to make things here. They used to make things here. I mean, I remember as a kid, blue jeans used to be the craze of the globe. American-made blue jeans used to be a thing. They used to be. And then my mind went to this other place. American CEOs are strung out on cheap labor. Maybe this is why Arkansas and Iowa are going after child labor laws. Just kind of a thought. We're just gonna import cheap labor right here at home. Just get those kids back to work. Yeah, I'm just throwing it out there. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, can we make jeans? Can we make apparel? Can we make our own clothing here at home? I've asked my good friend Scott Paul to come share some thoughts. He's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it is good to be with you tonight, as always. By the way, if you want to put my kids to work, you're more than welcome to. I just want to say we'll make an exception to the child labor rules.
So we're okay putting them on the kill floor there in Iowa?
That's horrific. Yeah, that is actually that's unimaginable that as a nation that that's happening here. Got to stop.
Yeah, we don't want them in sweatshops. We don't want them in buildings where they got suicide nets. At least I don't think so. I don't think so.
Yeah.
So what do you think? We can't make things here. These companies can't see a future. We're all going to walk around naked if we don't have Chinese children to exploit. Am I getting this right?
This is like, I don't even know where to start, because what gets me is like, if you're a clothing designer, right? Or if you're somebody, you have to have some imagination, some creativity. You know, there's something that sparked you to make something, and obviously people are responding to it, right? Either because it's great, or it's a great look, or it's prestige, or whatever reason. And so the thing that amazes me, Rick, is just the lack of imagination when it comes to sourcing the apparel. Like, where is it going to be made? And, you know, so many of these brands have a chance to make a great statement about, like, where things are made. And so few do. And this is the issue, is that, you know, it's become pretty clear that not all, but some manufacturing's moving out of China and needs to find another home, okay? And some of that will be in the United States, some of that will be in North America, some of that will be elsewhere around the world. But a bunch of these, like, apparel makers are like, well, we don't know what we're going to do without China. We just cannot imagine finding another source, because we've leaned on, and you described the conditions pretty accurately, you know, a system where we can basically exploit labor, exploit the environment, and with really low tariff access, get the products back in the United States. We're going to make major margins. And by the way, we're going to kind of hide how we're sourcing stuff. And we're going to shut up about whatever the Chinese Communist Party is doing, too, even though it's doing horrific things. And so this is kind of the deal that all of these really creative, imaginative folks have made. And it's frustrating, because I know this because I've talked to these people. If you have the intent to make it in the United States, or to make it sustainably somewhere else in the world, you can do it. And there's lots of great examples of where folks are doing that, and they're doing it profitably. I mean, there's a suit maker, Joseph Abboud, who's made suits in the United States for a long time. He's figured out. There's a guy named Byron Winthrop, who stood up this company, American Giant, and they make hoodies and other stuff like that. And they're start to finish, their entire supply chains in the United States. And they're making good money. They're opening retail stores in places because people are buying their products. And so it's entirely possible to do this if you have the intent. But they're just not asking the right question. And part of this is, I think, the bad advice they're getting, whether it's, you know, from MBAs or the management types or the sourcing professionals who are like, oh, you know what, you can just do it in China and not forget about it. Now, Now it's getting harder because of all the geopolitical tensions and what have you. And they're like, oh, boy, I don't know what to do.
And you look, you're probably going to have to take a little bit lesser of a margin. I mean, you're not going to make the giant, you know, profits that you made. You're going to make a profit, but not the enormous profits that you made exploiting children.
Yeah, and believe me, they're going to be fine, all right? I mean, the actual labor and material cost that is a brand product, whether it's a sneaker or a piece of fashion, is really, really small. That's a really, really small. I mean, most of that is in, the middleman markup, and also advertising, R&D, a whole bunch of stuff like that.
Advertising.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the reason I've never bought a pair of Nike. Never.
Yeah. I mean, it is like it's problematic, but this is kind of the mindset. And so what I do find people who have kind of reshored their supply chains or done it, I've been really interested to talk about it. And fundamentally, they all have one thing in common. And it's not necessarily like patriotism or whatever. It's like they all just had the intent. Said, I wanted to find a way to make it here. And so we made it work, you know, and it's as simple as that. And, you know, some people will say, well, we don't have the capacity in the United States right now. And I say, you know what? That's probably true. We don't. But if there's more demand, it'll scale up. I mean, what do you think happened in China? Right. I mean, it's the same kind of deal. It's like if there's going to be a market for making, you know, apparel in the United States, the supply chain's going to grow just as it is for semiconductors or some of these other products that you're seeing now.
Yeah, it's incredible to me. But I just thought it was interesting that, because people are starting to worry, where are we going to get our cheap stuff? And especially as we're kind of realigning, because I don't know, the thing in Ukraine has kind of got people a little worried. Because everyone's looking at Taiwan, everyone's looking at what is Russia going to do next. The globe is realigning, and the capitalists are worried that someone's going to come for their bank account.
Yeah, yeah. Just one more thing before we leave this subject, and this is because this example really burns me. This Apple, all right? Apple, look, great products, unbelievable design. Just it's a brilliant company in so many ways, and it used to make a lot of stuff in the United States like a generation ago. It really did, and it was like it made an example out of that. But it's changed dramatically, and it is rethinking its supply chain in China, but only after it thinks it's going to get kicked out by the Chinese Communist Party, not because it wants to leave. And just a few years ago, Rick, in order to stay in China and do what they did, and you describe it, you know, they have the nets to prevent suicide. They can rouse the workers in the middle of the night and get them to make a quick fix. And, you know, it's horrible pay and all of that. You know, they paid hundreds of billions of dollars in basically economic development money to the Chinese Communist Party and various federal and sub-federal governments in China. So that it could basically operate its contractors without harassment, you know. And so hundreds of billions of dollars to do this. It's like, you know what? It would cost $5 billion to put a factory in the United States. And the only reason why Apple is even thinking about diversifying its supply chain is because it thinks it now may get kicked out of China one day. Not because of a genocide or human rights abuses or anything else like that, but the fact that, you know, they'd rather leave on their own terms than be kicked out by the Chinese Communist
Party. Yeah, well, again, back to Rupert Murdoch. It's not about red or blue. It's about green. It's all about the money. Yeah. Everything is. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Scott Paul. Scott's the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Wanted to get some of your thoughts on you sat in front of the Select Committee on China a little over a week ago, I guess it was. Yeah. I'm now starting to see some pushback. I mean, there was a lot of rah-rah, a lot of, hey, this is the right direction. The moneyed folks kind of pushing back a little bit, it appears.
Yeah. I shouldn't be surprised, okay? But, you know, that hearing, obviously, you know, was a presentation of the challenges that the Chinese Communist Party presents to our economic and our national security in the United States from a variety of perspectives. There was a dissident there who had been in a forced labor camp in China. There was a you know, there's a China expert from the Trump administration, Trump's former national security advisor, myself testifying on what the experience has been like for working people in the United States. And the reaction from the New York Times, from Fareed Zakaria, who has a column in the Washington Post and a show on CNN, and Max Boot, who is an influential foreign policy columnist, and many others, is like, this thing was unfair. It did not present both sides of the story here. And there's a dangerous groupthink that is taking place on Capitol Hill that we got to do something to punish the Chinese Communist Party. And the editorial in the New York Times, it was, I mean, almost parody, because it's like, yeah, they've done this to the Uyghurs and, you know, they've been kind of aggressive to Taiwan and they don't meet their trade commitments and they never do this. And Xi is throwing out all norms and they're not reforming economically. But still, we shouldn't be tough on them. we shouldn't. It's too important of a relationship to change the terms.
Yeah, let's hear what they have to say.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, wait, the other side hasn't had its case, you know, made over the last 20, 25 years. They've had every opportunity to make their case. And one of these guys, Max Boot, the columnist, was like, well, we should hear from the U.S.-China Business Council. These are the people who have operations in China. All the American businesses that decided to open up shop. And what's the, you know, their perspective is very important. It's like, their perspective is the law right now. It's like, come on, give me a break, guys. So I think that upsetting the apple cart a little bit has created this hysteria, and they're trying to amplify everything that we said. It's like, well, they want a Cold War, they want a shooting war, they want something. It's like, no, we don't want any of that. But we do think that having a credible deterrent, changing the terms of the relationship so that it's real rather than abusive, is pretty important to making sure the Chinese leadership knows where we are, rather than basically capitulating as we have over the last few decades. What kind of a signal does that send to anybody? They will walk all over you.
And they have been. This is one of these moments where, we haven't had a shooting war, but we have been at war with China for years now. And we're the ones who just didn't know it. Ask those factory workers when I was in Iowa. Ask those factory workers who lost their jobs in Wisconsin and Michigan. Ask those farmers who lost their farms. Start asking people who have lost the millions of manufacturing jobs that have been lost because of our greedy CEOs and Chinese, what the Chinese communist government has sweetened the pot with, and the mercantilist policies that have destroyed the American family in this country. Let's hear from them. Let's hear what they've got to say. I'll listen to them before I listen to the, what was it again, the American Chinese Business Council?
Yeah, the U.S.-China Business Council. Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, I mean, it's astounding to me. It's like, you know, next to me was Tong Yi, who spent years in a forced labor camp in China because she disagreed with the government, was exiled to the United States, was constantly watched, right? And it's like, you know, she talked about what was happening here. And basically, the size of our trade deficit, $380 billion a year, funds the Chinese surveillance state inside China, which, you know, it costs $300 billion a year for the Chinese Communist Party to operate this. And the point is like, okay, what else do we need to happen here to change? And just because these issues are getting raised up now doesn't mean that we're trying to start something. We're trying to stop something. We're trying to change the terms of this relationship. And it was a process that started in the last administration. And look, it was a little bit clunky. And so this is our chance to get it right. But we can't go back to pretending like everything's okay and we can lift the tariffs and things are going to be great and this government's going to change its mind, and instead of building six new coal-fired power plants, is suddenly going to become, you know, a green dream. No, China's not going to do that. They've made it very clear, and so we have to follow our policies, be true to our values, and make sure that we're not shedding jobs and our morality in the process here.
Yeah, see, I look at this as an opportunity because, as you pointed out a second ago, The tariffs began under Trump, and good on him for doing it. A lot of this direction, you know, misguided as some of it may have been, and without direction, basically rudderless as it was at least getting us started. And I think Biden has done a very good job of reshoring some manufacturing and moving us in a direction to where we're going to start rebuilding our manufacturing, which we have to do from a national security point, if nothing else. I think we're heading in the right direction. To have this both sidesism, this is kind of you know, infuriating. And this should be something that should be nonpartisan. Red hat, blue hat, never mind. Get on a hard hat. Let's get back to work.
I'm totally with you on that. And it's just like, it's one of those jaw-dropping moments that it's like, wait, elite opinion has been carrying the day here for a couple of decades to our detriment. I mean, you've seen what happened in the heartland. I have. Meanwhile, things haven't improved. In fact, they've worsened for Hong Kong, for Tibet, for the Uyghurs, for Taiwanese. I mean, they feel more threatened than ever. You know, Asia is feeling very uneasy about China's aggression. And, you know, if we don't stand up and say, here's the line, you know, here's the line, and also make sure that we have the ability as a country to compete and not to depend on key materials from China, then, you know, what's ever going to change? They're going to dig in. It's going to get worse. So Absolutely. We got to make some progress.
Lastly, I want to get your thoughts on the job numbers just came out last week, 311,000 new jobs. But on the negative side, 4,000 factory jobs were lost. Is that a hiccup? Is that, you know, a correction? You know, what should we take from that?
Yeah. So, Rick, we've seen a little bit of fading over the last couple of months in manufacturing jobs where it's kind of been dialed down. And I think more than anything else, it is a direct product of the Federal Reserve's interest rate policies. And I think in many ways they hit manufacturing hard. They hit it hard directly. Because higher interest rates mean the dollar is worth more, means it's harder to export. That impacts manufacturing. Imports coming in are cheaper. That impacts the competitiveness of domestic manufacturing. And then secondarily, the interest rates are also screwing around with the housing market and what have you, which is a large market for manufacturing. Yeah. And so they're getting hit a couple of different ways here. And I think that Powell and I think it's possible to land this plane, but I don't think that they can raise rates, and I think they got to start heading the opposite direction pretty soon.
They got to stop slamming on the brakes with both feet.
That's right.
Yeah, you got it. And we've been saying this for a while. Look, I mean, you look at what's going on with these banks, you know, bad management, and, you know, lax regulations. And of course, you know, the Fed slamming on the brakes with both feet, causing chaos there. You know, nothing good going to come of this. But Scott, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff.
You bet. Great to be with you tonight, Rick. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Our good friend, Scott Paul. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1912. That was the day that participants in the famed Bread and Roses strike gathered in Lawrence, Massachusetts to celebrate their victory. The strike had begun in January and was a hard-fought battle. More than 20,000 textile workers, most of them women, speaking more than 20 languages, participated in the action. It was a powerful stand of workers' solidarity across ethnic lines. On March 12th, the American Woolen Company agreed to most of the strikers' demands. In the days that followed, other companies also agreed to terms. the workers gained between 5 and 25% raises depending on their jobs. They also gained overtime pay. The ripples of this impact flowed throughout New England. It's estimated that 150,000 textile workers saw raises in the aftermath of the historic work action. At the gathering to commemorate the strike, leader of the Industrial Workers of the World, Big Bill Haywood, addressed the crowd saying, "You are the heart and soul of the working class. You, the strikers of Lawrence, have won the most signal victory of any organized body of working men in the world. You have demonstrated that there is a common interest in the working class that can bring all its members together." Despite the significance of this strike, the story is not taught in many of our schools. In 2011, the Zinn Education Project found that only 2 of the 10 major U.S. history textbooks discussed the strike. Today, let's take a minute to remember those brave women who declared, "Yes, it's bread we fight for, but we fight for roses too." For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
They gotta love today's Republican Daily Outrage, because there's one every day, right? There's a Republican Daily Outrage every day, because you got to keep feeding the faithful with the Daily Outrage candy to keep them all upset, so they don't realize how bad we're getting screwed over on virtually every front. But today's outrage brought to you by the Republican Party. They actually tweeted out today in the Daily Outrage, "First it was gas cars, then gas stoves. Now Democrats are going after washing machines." That's right. They said washing machines are next. "The left wants to make us lock down at home, eat bugs, and wash our clothes in the river, all in the name of climate." Really? And I'm going, okay, well, where's... And again, there's no documentation. There's no, hey, this is what they're doing. So I'm searching around on the inner tubes, and I'm trying to find, okay, who said something stupid about washing machines? Because I'm assuming it's going to be something coming out of California or Arizona or, you know, one of the southwestern states that, you know, is going, maybe we should be looking at conserving water in one sense or another. Maybe we should be having washing machines that use a limited amount of water, like the one I paid, the one we have. It's a limited water washing machine. Washes clothes fine. It's not like the old tubs filled up a gazillion gallons of water. You know, maybe we should be moving towards that because, you know, water is going to be a commodity we're going to be fighting wars over at some point. I was looking for that. I didn't even find that. But it was just one of those things. We got to throw some outrage. Got to get the outrage candy out there. Yeah. Also, if you need something to get, if you do need something to get really outraged about, South Carolina, they've introduced a new piece of legislation in the state house there that any woman who gets an abortion in South Carolina, death penalty. Yep. Death penalty. Now, interestingly enough, you've got a number of states that are saying, hey, you know, why is Walgreens pulling contraception off the shelves? In fact, you had a couple of senators who sent a letter to Albertsons, the big chain, grocery chains, to Costco, to Kroger, and to Walmart, you know, asking them where they stand on what they're calling the abortion pill. Because Walgreens has said that they're not going to sell it in certain states, you know, red states. And there's a part of me that goes, I'm okay with this. I'm okay with Walgreens saying, sorry, ladies, nothing for you. Because here's the dirty little secret. And my wife, you know, arm's reach away from me, will testify to this. She spends way more money than I do. Way more. In fact, she spends the majority of the money in our household because she does all the grocery shopping, all the clothing shopping for kids, all of the shopping for everything. That's her gig. She likes it. She does it. She spends it. Do you know where she's not going to go by choice? I mean, again, you know, if you believe in the free market, this is a power of women to go, you know what? Sorry, Walgreens. We're not going to ever for anything. This is how you deal with these folks. Because understand, you know, contraception is something that's popular. you know, more than 60% of the country goes, yeah, something we should have. It's a handful of crazy people on the extreme right who are pushing for this kind of stuff. Maybe here's a thought. Maybe you punish them financially. Stop going to Walgreens, not just in the state.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250.